Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on war when we come back. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. And rule number one is you don't say anything, you keep your mouth shut, and shut up. If you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that's going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. Listen to what the courts have to say about this thing of keeping your mouth shut in the face of police interrogation and, indeed, police intimidation. The first judge in U.S. v. Dickerson worded it like this. He said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" A second judge in Belknap v. United States put it this way. He said, "You can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." Belknap v. U.S. Third judge said this. He said, "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted." He said that in Marchetti v. United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary. Commentary on the law school and then the Law Hour, and it's entertaining, educational, informative, and free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc. That's our school for home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about this thing called war, and last time I mentioned that God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He said that in Hebrews 13, verse 8. Remember sweet Jesus? You know, the nice guy that's kinder and gentler? The nice, kind, and gentle God. Well, that's the God of the Christians, the God of religion, the God of Western society. It's not the God of the Bible. And then there's this guy, Allah. He's a nice guy, too, I'm sure. And he's revered by about 100 million Arabs, probably close to a billion people, Muslims all around the world. And this guy, Allah, you know, he's got a book, it's called the Quran. And like I said, he's probably a real nice guy. He's probably kind, he's probably gentle, well liked by everybody. This God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he is despised by everybody. There isn't anybody in the world that likes him. If you were running in a contest for likable God, this is not the one you want to. This is not the one you want to get involved with. You know, Buddha's a pretty nice guy, and Allah's a pretty nice guy. Jesus is a pretty good guy. And Shinto and Confucius, and you know, just name a god somewhere: Mars, Neptune, Jupiter, Venus. You know, they're a moon, Moon Day. You know, that they're all good gods. This one is not a good god. Nobody likes him. In fact, when Moses had our forefathers out in the wilderness, our forefathers wanted to stone Moses. They didn't like him at all. And on numerous occasions, God told Moses, he said, "Get out of my way, Moses. I'll kill all these suckers out here and we'll start over with you." Now, it was Moses' intercession in those critical periods that made the difference between your existence today and non-existence. Because if God had had his way, he would have cleaned them out and started over again with Moses, and we'd have a different, we'd still have an Israel, we'd still have a program here, but it would be something different with different people. It wouldn't be with you. So I'm kind of tickled that old Moses jumped in there and said, well, wait a minute now, God, well, you got this contract with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob now. Let's calm down and be reasonable. And let's figure out another way. And then God would back off and he'd say, well, okay. And so then he would plague these people. And there's a number of plagues in this 40-year wandering in the wilderness. And as I mentioned to you last time, the thing that causes this each and every time, it's that the people would get uppity, and then they would do that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. We saw that there in the, what was it, chapter 3 of Judges. You know, it was constantly the Israelites did that which was evil in the eyes of the Eternal. This God over here, he saw what they were doing. He said, well, I think that's pretty evil. Then he'd punish them. And sometimes it was with a war. So as you go through the scripture, you'll see that war is a number of times used as the punishment that we get. Now, disease is a very common punishment. I mean, there's a number of cases in the scripture where disease and plague have come upon people. And there's a number of cases in the Bible where wars have come upon people to destroy them. And then God has said that he was upset about that. And so he says, I'm going to pay you to your face. In Deuteronomy 7, verses 9 through 11, he gets kind of straightforward here. I'll read it to you. I mean, this guy, he's not bashful at all. He just gets right up there in your face and says, let me tell you how this is coming down. In Deuteronomy 7, verse 9, he says, know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. 1,000 generations. You know how long that is? There's 40 years to a generation. 40. Not 20. 40. Times 1,000. I got my famous Sharp 1197 G3. That's 40,000 years. Hell, the earth's only been here for 6, and he says, I'll keep my word to you for 40,000 years. Now, I don't know what was going to happen in 41,000 or 45,000 or 50,000 years, but he said for 40,000 years, I'd keep my word to you. So for the last 3,000 years, I don't think he's done a bad job, but constantly he keeps repeating this term. He says, and the children of Israel did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. And then there's this war, there's this punishment, there's this plague that comes down upon them. So it doesn't take us very long to figure out that probably the breach of contract is coming from our side, more than likely. Now, in verse 10, he says, and repays them that hate him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack to him that hates him. He will repay him to his face. And you shall therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them. So I asked this in the last program. I said, now, are you Israelis over there doing these statutes, judgments, and commandments? Hey, are you Hezbollah guys over there? Are you doing these statutes, judgments, and commandments? You Palestinians, are you practicing these judgments? Because this God, not talking about Allah now and Buddha and Shinto and Confucius, I'm talking about this guy. He says, I'm going to pay you to your face. Now that's getting down to where it's down and dirty and right up close and personal. I looked at that some years back and I said, I don't really want to meet this guy in a dark alley and have him pay me back to my face. And that's because he's pretty mean. But there's more to the story than that. At Jericho, now flip over here to Joshua, just the next book over. You get past Deuteronomy. Very next book is called Joshua. And in Joshua 6, verse 21, he's got a famous statement here. Verse 21. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass with the edge of the sword. This is the story of Jericho. Quite a little story. This is a take no prisoners God. No concentration camps. This is the genocide God. This is the other side of this God that you've probably never heard of before. Now, you know, people, they walk around like Bill Clinton carrying this Bible under their arm. I saw him coming out of church one day. Yeah, the same guy that was banging this Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office comes out of church with a Bible under his arm. Of course, she was a slut. He was a stud. Isn't that the way it is? You know, men that commit adultery, they're called studs, and women that commit adultery are called sluts. I don't know where this double standard comes from. It doesn't come from the Bible. It doesn't come from the God of Abraham. It comes from Christianity. It comes from this kinder and gentler God, some other guy. Well, anyway, this Jericho story over here, it's about 4 or 5 chapters long. You can read it for yourself, Joshua chapter 5, 6, you know, 7 long in there. And he came up to this city, kind of a city-state over there, and he instructed the Israelites. He said, give them the terms of surrender. This is one of the laws that deal with this thing of war. It says you walk up there and you come up to the gates of the city and say, okay, boys, we're going to give you 24 hours and come on out. Wave your white flag, and we won't kill all of you. Now, if you don't come out, then tomorrow, when we have to attack the city, it's going to be a different story. And so, in Anglo-Saxon administration, and you'll see this now, anytime that Americans and Canadians and British and guys like that, you know, go into battle, they give the other side an opportunity to surrender. George Bush did that. He called upon Saddam Hussein. He said, now, pack up, get the hell out of Dodge, we'll move in and take over and everything will be fine. So George Bush followed that law. And, of course, Saddam Hussein, he didn't pack up and leave Dodge. And so, you know, shock and awe took over from there. Now, there's another factor that comes in here concerning war that I think I ought to share with you. And that is the statutes on war require that the high priest go out on the battlefield first. Now, we don't do that. We always send our generals and we send our rangers and the SEALs, you know, the Navy SEALs. We send them in first. Reconnaissance and things like that. Well, if you'll take a look at Numbers 31, verses 1 through 54, there's a story in there about Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest. And then in Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20, is another story that deals with war. More instruction on here's the way you do this. We didn't follow this instruction in Korea and Vietnam. And we didn't get the kind of results that we were expecting. In Deuteronomy 21, verses 10 through 14, here's another statute that deals with captives. You know, sometimes you might take some prisoners. And it identifies the kind of prisoner that you'll take, like a beautiful woman. Virgins, you can take them. And the rest of the women and children and everybody else in there, depending upon how God's judgment came down upon that city or that country, you kill them all. And so last time I used the term genocidal maniac. Well, my granny, she thought God was a genocidal maniac, but I take a little different view. I take a look at it from the perspective of a cattleman. And I've got some cows out here, and we've got a law here that says, thou shalt not steal. So if you come over here and kill one of my cows, that's theft, that's rustling. If I go out and kill them, that's lawful, and there's nothing wrong with that because I own them. Now, God says that He owns the earth, He owns the universe, and He owns all the things, all the chattels that are in the earth. He calls it His footstool. So, you know, from a cattleman's point of view, since He owns the ranch, He can pretty much do as He pleases. Now, He also made an observation one time. He said, I don't take any particular pleasure in the death of the wicked. But He also said, I won't be slack in dealing with him that hates me. I'll pay him to his face, live and direct. I'll get right down and dirty. I'll get right up close and personal, if that's what it takes. In Deuteronomy 24, verse 5, here's another statute that deals with military service. We don't follow this here in the United States. When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war. You know, you got these young men over in Iraq, you know, they're married. And some of them just took a wife. They're not supposed to go out to war in their first year. Neither shall he be charged with any business. But he shall be free at home 1 year and shall cheer up his wife which he has taken. And in Deuteronomy 28, verses 15 through 68, now that's a war chapter if there ever was one. And so God tells us very plainly in there, here's what I'm going to do to you now if you get uppity with me. Five laws here that you should be familiar with as it relates to war. And one of those principles, and it's just one of many, but one of those principles is that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, should walk out on the battlefield first with a censer. And his job is to go out on the battlefield, and if God has authorized this war, he will tell the high priest, who in turn will go back and tell the president. Go back and tell Moses. And if the war isn't authorized, then it's time to leave the battlefield, mind your business, and get out of Dodge. Because this thing's not going to come out well for you. Now, we don't follow those principles. We don't follow those practices here today. The president decided that we needed to go to war, so he sold that to the Congress and sold it to the people of America. And we all thought that was a great idea. And so we went to war, and now we find out 3 years later this isn't such a good idea. And now we're all kind of sad about it, and we don't know quite what to do. Now, I pointed out to you the last time that God doesn't take any prisoners. And at Jericho, there was total genocide. They killed all the men, women, and children, all the dogs, cats, and pigs, all of the livestock. Nothing came out of there alive. Now, President Bush and Donald Rumsfeld talked about shock and awe. Boys and girls, what do you think of that kind of shock and awe when there are no survivors, not even a chicken left alive? By God, I call that shock and awe now. And I said in the last program, I said, you Muslims over in Iraq, you should be on your knees thanking Allah every day that the God of Abraham is not running that war from the White House. Because if he was, there wouldn't be any Iraqis left alive after 3 years of war with this guy. He wouldn't have left any of you alive. Not even your dogs, cats, chickens, pigs, sheep, or goats would be left alive. And as I mentioned, Joe Stalin practiced the scorched earth policy. And this is the way you bring peace to a region. You bring peace. And the reason I mention that this is the way to bring peace is because, let's go back to Lebanon. The Hezbollah guys over there are the underdogs. They don't have anywhere near the military machine that the Israelis have. So they went out and they kidnapped three Israelis over here to provoke this fight. And they got the fight started. And so now they're in it. And the Israelis do not have the stomach for practicing the kind of war that the God of Abraham requires to bring peace. And I suspect that that's because the Israelis really don't want peace, they want profit. Rather than peace, we want profit. The Hezbollah guys over there, they're being financed by the Iranians. And the Iranians and the Hezbollah guys, they don't want peace either, they want to fight. So you can't have any peace among people that want to make profit and want to fight. That's not the stuff of peace. So the way God does it is a little different. Now, the way this is going to come out, now you just mark my words, watch how this comes out. In a couple of weeks or a month, the Hezbollah guys will be beaten into the ground. They've used up all their rockets and they'll sue for peace. And then this international peacekeeping force will come in and the Israelis will sign up with this ceasefire. Ceasefire means let's take a breather while we rearm for the next round. That's what ceasefire means. There's no peace in ceasefire. You know, you guys have been having ceasefires over there for the last 50 years, but you don't have any peace. So it should be pretty obvious to you that ceasefire does not equal peace. Never has in the past, doesn't now, and it never will in the future. And God never practiced ceasefires. Never practiced, let's take prisoners, and let's have prisoner exchanges, or let's have a treaty. Now, they're talking about this two-state program over there in Palestine, where the Israelis will have their state, and the Palestinians will have their state, living side by side in peace. Now, anybody that believes that has got to believe in the Wizard of Oz. That is the most preposterous poppycock I think I've ever heard. It's ludicrous. Those people hate each other. They're not going to live in peace next door to each other. And so they want to sign a peace treaty. You know what peace treaties are? Those are covenants and agreements that you make with your enemies. As old Joe Stalin said, Lenin said, promises are like pie crusts made to be broken. Promises are like pie crusts. Well, that's what a treaty is. It's a pie crust made to be broken. Now, our forefathers made some of these treaties. We've been through this treaty thing before. And so, not the Israelis now, but the Israelites. When the Israelites were in the same jam and the same piece of real estate over there in Palestine, back here right after Moses died, you know, then Joshua took over. They went in, conquered the land over there, and here's what happened to them. In Judges chapter 2, it says, an angel of the Eternal came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and have brought you into the land which I swore unto your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And you shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. You shall throw down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Now why have you done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare unto you. Now you Israelis could have thrown those Palestinians out of there in 1948, but you didn't do that, did you? And instead, you made a peace treaty with them, didn't you? And then you said, well, let's assimilate these people into our populations. In short, you did evil in the sight of the Eternal, and now he came back and says, now I'm not going to drive them out. And these Palestinians have been a thorn in your side from that day to this, and you haven't seen the last of that thorn yet. Here in America, we did the same thing with the American Indians. And we said, well, we're not going to drive these Indians out. We're going to make marriages with them. And we did. And we have. And God has not driven them out. And they are thorns in our sides to this day. And they will continue to be thorns in our side. And God will not drive them out. There will be no peace with the American Indian. There will be no peace with the Palestinians. And there will be no peace with Hezbollah. None. Zero. Zilch. And the God of Abraham, who told you very plainly over here, said, now, I'm the God of war. And he says, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I change not. And the scripture cannot be broken. And all of these things have happened to them for and samples. And they're written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. We're supposed to learn from these actions, from these mistakes, from these correct decisions of the past. The Israelis didn't learn anything from anything in the scripture here. Of course, I'm not sure they follow this God. They got a different guy. And then, of course, the Hezbollah guys, they got a different guy. Let me show you another little story here. It's called the story of Ai in Joshua 8, verse 22. No prisoners. Joshua 8, verse 22. I'll flip back here a little bit. Joshua, you know, he was the guy who took over after Moses, verse 22. And the other issue out of the city against them, and the other issued out of the city against them. So they were in the midst of Israel, some on this side and some on that side, and they smote them so that they let none of them remain or escape. Now that's the second battle of Ai. Now, the first battle of Ai didn't go well for our guys. What happened was we had instructions. And just one guy out of thousands, screwed it up for everybody. And he broke the law. And when it came down to where we finished the fight, we got the hell kicked out of us. They just stomped us, ate our lunch, and then threw us out of the lunchroom. So the people were all you know, wondering, well, what happened to our God? You know, we did so well at Jericho, and we come over here to Ai and we get stomped. And so God sent a little message down there, and he said, well, it's because you didn't do what I told you. And so they got to looking around. They found this one guy and his family who hadn't followed instructions. And so they took him out, and they stoned him to death, and they got their instructions straight again. They said, okay, now let's go back and do this Ai story over again. And they went back, the second battle of Ai, kind of like the first battle of Bull Run. And then you got the second battle of Bull Run, you know, didn't get it right the first time. Let's go back and do it over again. They came back the second time, and they didn't leave anybody alive. Again, you Muslims should be thankful that that guy Olmert in Tel Aviv, that he's not working for the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because if he were, there wouldn't be any of you Hezbollah guys left to talk about victory. Now, what's going to happen is this. They'll come down here with a ceasefire pretty shortly. And then the Hezbollah guys, they'll jump up and down and say, ha ha, we beat you Israelites. And then the Israelites, they'll jump up and down and say, ha ha, well, we beat you Hezbollah guys. And then all of us guys around the world say, well, God, we can't figure out who won that. Sounded like a tie to us. And the Hezbollah guys and all the Arabs say, if you can beat the Israelis down to a tie, that's a victory. That's big time news. And then the Israelite guys, they'll say, well, we killed about 90% of them Hezbollah guys, and we stopped them, and we put an international force in there. So we think we kind of got the upper hand or the better of that deal. But there's always going to be this controversy. Now, the way God does it is this. You see, if God was running the show from Tel Aviv, then the Israelites would go straight up to that Lana River, whatever they call it there. And then they would cut off the retreat of the Hezbollah guys, and then they would come back, and they'd kill every man, woman, and child in the south of Lebanon. Every one of them. There'd be no survivors. There'd be no cattle left. You talk about scorched earth. Hey, you talk about shock and awe. And when it was all said and done, we'd all be sitting there saying, well, who won this war? Well, the Israelis, they'd jump up and down and say, well, we won. And on the other side, there wouldn't be anybody jumping up and down because they're all dead. And there wouldn't be any doubt in anybody's mind as to who won that war. Oh, it would be brutal. It would be bloody. It would be shocking. It would gag a maggot. But there would be peace in Israel for about 80 years. There'd be peace over there. And that's what happened during the days of Joshua. Now, they had about seven nations over there that they were having problems with. Seven. And it wasn't just with the Lebanese or the Jordanians or the Egyptians. Seven of them guys around there. And so God said, well, let's go after them. Let's go get after it. And so they did. And there's another story over here in 1 Samuel. After they had conquered the land, after all of this is done and about 300 years has gone by, Joshua's dead, Samson is dead, all these judges are dead. We come up to the last guy, Samuel, the last judge in Israel, before they took on this king. And the people said, we want a king like all the nations around us. And God said, now that's a slap in the face. You know, that's not good. I thought I was a pretty good guy. I thought I was a pretty good God. I gave you victories in Jericho, victories in Ai. I gave you victory over all of your enemies. I've blessed you and done all these good things for you. I gave you all these blessings. And now you come give me the finger and tell me that you want a king. You want to replace me. You want to vote me out of office. I always felt bad, you know, for old Winston Churchill. After he guided England through the war, 1945, he wins the war. And how do the people of England treat Winston Churchill? They vote him out. Kicked him out. Same thing here, you know, after 300 years of pretty good living, the people said, well, we're going to vote God out. We're going to kick him out of here. We don't want him. So I told you early on, I said, this God is about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. You don't like him. And the people didn't like him, and they didn't like Moses. They didn't like God at the time of Samuel. They said, we want a king. So they got a king, and in 1 Samuel 15, flip over here now, 1 Samuel chapter 15, about verse 3, tells you a little story here. I'll just kind of give you a little lead up to it. It seems that the Amalekites, who were enemies of Israel for a long time, finally got God's ire up, and he said, "You know, I think I'll straighten out this Amalekite problem." So he goes over to Samuel and says, "Now I want you to send Saul, our new king, down to the Amalekites, and I want you to destroy him. I want you to kill the king, and I want you to kill all of his court and all of his lords and nobles down there, and I want you to kill all the men, women, and children. I want you to kill all of the dogs, cats, and pigs, and cows, and sheep, and goats, and everything else. I want them all dead. Genocide. I'm going to practice a little genocide trip." Now, here in America, we signed the Genocide Convention, and everybody in the world is kinder and gentler, and that's because war produces profits and peace doesn't. And when you practice genocide, see, it eliminates the other side. Kids, you can't have war with dead people. And so this God, and I'm not talking about your God, I'm not talking about the gods, you know, of the Japanese and the Chinese and the Muslims. I'm talking about this God here, not the God of the Israelis now. This God, the God of Abraham, the God of the Bible, this weird guy. Yeah, the reason that you have peace breaks out in the land is because you don't have any enemies to give you any static tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock because they're all dead, and dead men don't make war. Old Mahatma Gandhi said, "Dead frogs don't dance." Okay, dead men don't make war. So I mentioned to you last time, I said, now the Israelis are bound to lose over the long haul because their official policy is we're not going to destroy our enemies. But the official policy of the Arabs is we're going to destroy the Israelites. Well, you know, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure out the ultimate end of that kind of a program. So in 1 Samuel 15, verse 3, it says, he says, "Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling." Infant. This is, listen, write this down. I mean, this is something big. This is something different. You people have never heard of a God like this. This is God speaking. And he said, "I want you, Saul, to go down to these Amalekites. I want you to destroy all that they have. I don't want you to spare them. I want you to slay man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass." I want you to kill all the camels and all the donkeys right along with them. I not only want you to kill the men and the soldiers down there, I want you to kill even the suckling children. So, old Saul goes down there with his army and he killed the men, but he took the women and the children and the cattle and the sheep as a prey, and he brought them back home. And so Samuel comes out one day from Ramah, and he says, "What's this bleating of sheep that I hear?" And Saul said, "Well, you know, we got down there and we defeated them. Just coming right out of the chute. We just whipped them. And so I brought the king back captive, kind of like our President Bush. You know, they caught Saddam Hussein, brought him back captive, and now they've got a big circus going on over there." Now, this God over here, if he would have caught Saddam Hussein, he wouldn't have lived to sundown. Saddam Hussein would have been killed before sundown. And that's what happened here with Samuel. As soon as Samuel saw this king, he took a sword and cut his head right off. Killed him right there. No trial, no due process, no equal protection, no nothing, just dead. D-E-D, dead. That's the end of it. You can read that story. It is in 1 Samuel 15. And over here in verse 22, it kind of tells us the answer to this. And Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great a delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Eternal? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than a fat ram's. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Eternal, he has also rejected you from being king." And from that point on, in Saul's career, he was rejected as king, and David came in and took over after him. Now, David was a bloody man. And the scripture uses that very term. It says David was a bloody man. He had a young woman one time, he wanted to marry her, and he paid her dowry with 200 Philistine foreskins. He called them the uncircumcised Philistines. So he took them out and he circumcised them, took those Philistines' foreskins and took them up to the king. He says, "Hey, I'd like to marry your daughter." And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school or The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. You can access that through the website. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. And The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by just calling us here at The Law School. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call The Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about war, a lot of times people will say, "Well, I don't have any respect for a God like that. That's a bloody God. That's my granny. My grandmother, she just hated this God." I mean, she was a religious lady. She kind of liked God. But she didn't like this Old Testament God. God, she hated this guy. But that was pretty normal because these people back in Old Testament times, they hated God also. They kicked him out. They wouldn't follow his instructions. They didn't do jack diddly squat for this God. And you can't blame him. I mean, he's a genocidal maniac. What else can you say? Did you hear that again? In verse 3, chapter 15, he says, he gives this instruction to Saul the king. He says, "I want you to go down. I want you to smite Amalek and totally destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay man and woman, infant and suckling." I mean, you got to take little babies off of their mother's breast and kill them. Can you do that? See, I don't think you Israelis over there can do that in Lebanon. I don't think you've got it. I'm not so sure about those Hezbollah guys. I think those Hezbollah guys can take your Jewish women and kill them, and I think that they can take the little suckling infant baby and kill it too. I think that the Arabs have it. I don't think the Israelis do. And I'll guarantee you the Americans don't have it. They can't do that. Now, of course, you've got some powerful enemies here in the United States. And those enemies in the United States, and, well, not just in the United States, but around the world, you know, you've got your enemies. And those enemies are going to destroy the United States of America. And if you want to see what they're going to do to you, you take a look at your two chapters, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And if that doesn't prompt you to straighten up and fly right, nothing will. Nothing will. All right, so there's your three examples. Now, I could show you 20 more examples of this genocide policy. And it produces peace, and the reason that it produces peace is because there aren't any enemies to give you any more static. Now, our politicians talk a lot about peace, don't they? They talk peace, peace, when there is no peace. So let's take a look here at this word peace over here, because in Isaiah 57, verses 19 through 21, Isaiah, the prophet, had a little something to say about this thing called peace. And he said, the way of peace they know not. Isaiah 57, let's flip over there and take a look at that. Because I think that that's pretty accurate. I don't think that these politicians, I don't think George Bush and Tony Blair know the way to peace. I don't think they got a clue. I think they're probably sincere people. They honest to God believe that we can have two states over there of these Palestinians if we can just get the Palestinians, you know, and the Israelis to sit down and talk. I think it'll iron it out. I think that's what they honest to God believe. But Isaiah, clear back here, you know, around 700 BC, he said in verses 19 through 21, he says, I create the fruit of the lips, peace, peace to him that is far off and to him that is near, says the Eternal, and I will heal him. But the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. And there is no peace, says my God, to the wicked. And that gives rise to this old statement, you know, this old-timey statement that says there's no rest for the wicked. You ever heard that? No rest for the wicked. It comes from right here. There's no place, says my God, to the wicked. Now, two more chapters over in 59, Isaiah 59, 1 through 8. And he tells a little story here about peace. Behold, the Eternal's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, and neither is ear heavy that he can't hear. But your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you that he will not hear you. Now, you Israelis over there, I don't know who you're praying to. I'm sure that when your sons and daughters and your menfolk are out there fighting, that you're praying to somebody. But this God here says, your iniquities have separated you, you from him, and he's not going to hear you. And you Americans, you can pray to Jesus all you want, you know, but he said he wasn't going to hear you. He told you that in 1 Samuel chapter 8 also. He said, you'll cry out to me in that day when you got George Bush running your War Department and Donald Rumsfeld. He said, you'd cry out to him, and he said, I'm not going to hear you. So when students come here to the law school, I point that out to them and I say, okay, guys, you know, we made our beds. Now it's time for us to sleep in them. So you can forget about praying to Jesus to save your bacon because he's already told you he ain't doing it. Now there's a solution to this problem. And the solution keeps coming back over and over and over again. Now listen to this again. It's verse 2. He says, your iniquities have separated between you and your God. Iniquity. It's your sins. It's your criminal behavior. You know, it's going out here like Bill Clinton banging that Monica Lewinsky. You know, that's a crime. And then 72% of the American public said that what Bill Clinton does in his spare time is his business and it's nobody else's, and we're not going to get involved. But listen, kids, I'm telling you, that's your king, that's your president. You elected that guy, and he has to obey God and keep his commandments, and when he doesn't, and you people condone that kind of filthy behavior, it makes you accessories after the fact. You might not have known what he was doing before the fact, but you sure as hell knew what was going on after the fact, and then you supported it. And you do the same thing with the sodomites. And you're doing the same thing with abortion. Now, you know, there's only so much abortion, there's only so much sodomy, there's only so much adultery that can go on, and old dad's going to come unhinged, and he's going to pay us now to our face. I showed you that. He's going to pay us to our face. And I'm telling you, I'm not really sure that you people want to get paid to your face. Not by this guy. This guy, remember, doesn't take any prisoners. And he doesn't dink around over here with peace treaties. All right, so now there's another little story over here, though, in 1 Thessalonians 5:3, up here in the New Testament. You know, for you Christians. You know, because Christians, they don't believe the Old Testament. They think Jesus is a liar. And in Matthew 4, verse 4, Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Well, when he said that, the only scriptures, the only words that had ever proceeded out of the mouth of God were in the first 39 books of the Old Testament. The New Testament hadn't been written yet. When he said that. And when he said that, he cited it directly out of the law of Moses in Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. Jesus didn't know that the Old Testament had been abolished and done away with and nailed to the cross. He didn't understand that. Jesus evidently was dumb. Thank God we've got Christians today that go to seminary and study the Bible and study religious books and can fix God's mistakes, because obviously he's out of touch with reality. Now, I'm just a reporter. I just came here to tell you that's what he said. He said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So, some of the words that proceeded out of the mouth of God said, the way of peace they know not. That was in Isaiah 58, and I jumped ahead here now to 59, Isaiah 59. I want to flip over here to 1 Thessalonians, if I can find it here. It's kind of a little short book. See, after Corinthians, Colossians. See, now we're getting close. Here we are. 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 3. Listen to this. And this is the Apostle Paul. He says, for when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. Peace and safety. Hey, listen, don't you hear the Pope and all these preachers and all these holy joes and sky pilots talking about peace? And the politicians are all talking about peace. And the ambassadors and the United Nations guys and all talking peace. And all the news media guys are all talking about peace. Well, boys and girls, your God over here says there's no peace, there isn't going to be any peace, and I'm going to curse you with more war. And Jesus said there's going to be wars and rumors of wars. But don't be bothered with that. Don't get troubled. I mean, that's just part of the normal process. But he says this great tribulation is going to come upon you like a thief in the night, and it's going to be worse than Noah's flood. He said there hasn't been a time like it since Noah's time. Now I'm going to flip back here to Isaiah. In Isaiah 59, remember that guy Isaiah? Well, let's see here. I'm getting pretty close here. Isaiah 59, I was on verse 2. Verse 3 says, for your hands are defiled with blood, your fingers with iniquity, your lips have spoken lies, your tongue has muttered perverseness. None calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity, and they speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. God, that sounds like our Congress, doesn't it? That sounds like those 37,000 lobbyists out there paying bribes and buying legislation for Merck and Pfizer, doesn't it? Sounds like the AMA. They hatch cockatrice eggs. They weave the spider's web. He that eats of their eggs dies, and that which is crushed breaks out into a viper. Their webs shall not become garments, and neither shall they cover themselves with their works. Their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil. They make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. And the way of peace they know not. And there is no judgment in their goings. They have made them crooked paths, and whosoever goeth therein shall not know peace. You want to follow George Bush and the Republican Party, you will never know peace. You want to follow Omert, you want to follow Hezbollah, you want to follow Jihad, you will never know peace. There will only be war. Now, I don't care what you do, no skin off my back. But, you know, here in the United States, we're getting real excited about this war thing over here. Joe Lieberman just got beat. The other day, old Joe Lieberman, you know, pretty liberal Democrat up there in Connecticut. He supports the war, but then, of course, he's an insider. You know, he's part and parcel with the problem. And it really doesn't make any difference whether you elect a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, you could vote in a whole Democratic Congress in this coming election, and then you can follow that up with a new president, and you're still going to have wars. And if it isn't the war in Iraq, it'll be the war in Iran. If it isn't the war in Iran, it'll be the one in Venezuela. If it's not the one in Venezuela, it'll be the one in North Korea. You're going to have war after war after war. Now, there are laws that govern war, and I would suggest that we get back to practicing the laws that regulate war, and I think we'd have a whole lot more peace. That's a wild new concept. You know, just do what you're told. Sit down, shut up, fold your hands. So let me circle off this Isaiah story over here. And Jeremiah had a little bit to say about peace. He's the next guy over here, Jeremiah 6, verse 14. Listen to this. Jerry the prophet, in verse 14, he said, "They have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people, slightly saying, 'Peace, peace,' when there is no peace. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? No, they were not at all ashamed. Neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall at the time that I visit them, says, or rather, I visit them, they shall be cast down, says the Eternal." You know, our preachers, they come along and they're constantly telling us about peace, peace. The Pope is always talking about peace, peace. When there is no peace. Hasn't been, isn't now, and isn't going to be. You know, if anybody had his head screwed on straight, he'd say, "Let me tell you about this war story over here, because this war is not only bad, it's going to get worse. And it's going to get worse because we're not in compliance with the war statutes. And if we want peace, then we've got to get after it." I don't expect anybody to do that. I mean, I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind. But I'm smart enough to stay the hell out of the road. Now, if you people want to go after war, I'm going to get out of your way and let you go after it. But you need to know that this isn't going to be good for you. I always like that quote by William Tecumseh Sherman. He said, "You know, the guys that are crying out and screaming and yelling for war the most are the guys that have never been shot at, and the guys that have never fired a shot, never heard the groans and the moans of the wounded." He said, "War is hell." I don't deny that. I'm pretty sure that that's probably pretty true. War is probably hell. Verse 11 of Jeremiah 8, he says, "For they have healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, 'Peace, peace,' when there is no peace." Peace, peace, when there is no peace. He repeated that twice. And Isaiah said, "The way of peace they know not." And Paul the Apostle said, "And they have not known peace." All right. Now, you talk about it all the time, but you don't have it, and you're not going to get it. So get ready for more war. You're ready for more death and destruction, more taxes, and more of everything that you don't want. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you a solution to the problem. Now, remember, God keeps telling us, says, now, the reason that you've got these wars over here is because of your iniquities and your sins. Now, the whole nation isn't going to change, but you can. And as soon as you change, you can have peace. God will protect you from the war. He will protect you from the belligerent combatants if you practice the law. If you don't, now he won't. It's just that simple. Time and chance might happen to you. Now, the last item I want to bring up here is that we've got some covenants over here. Listen to this in Judges. I think I read this to you a little earlier here. Joshua, Judges, he said, "Now, I brought you up out of Gilgal." Remember that? And I said, "Don't make any treaties with these guys." He said, "An angel of the Eternal came up from Gilgal to Bogim, and he said, 'I made you to go up out of Egypt and brought you into the land which I swore to your fathers and said, I'll never break my covenant with you.' And I showed you that was 40 generations. That's 1,000 years. And you shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land." Now, they're constantly talking about a peace treaty with the Palestinians. You Israelis, you're going to make a peace treaty with these Palestinians. Well, let me put the shoe on the other foot. Hey, you Palestinians, you're going to make a peace treaty with your enemies, the Israelites, the Israelis. They're not Israelites, but they're... Now, I don't know about Allah, but the God of Abraham is telling you guys, you don't make peace treaties. What you do is you obey God and keep His commandments. If you Palestinians would obey God and keep His commandments, He would destroy your enemies. If you Israelis would obey God and keep His commandments, He would destroy your enemies. And when it's all said and done, it's the guys that obey God and keep His commandments first. Neither side is going to do that. the Hezbollah guys aren't going to obey God and keep his commandments, and the Israelis aren't going to do it. So what you're going to have is peace treaties in violation of this statute. Now, there's four statutes here. Let me show you what they are. In Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33, he told us very early on, he said, "You shall make no covenants with them nor with their gods, and they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you." How many of those Palestinians have you got in Israel? And how much trouble have you had trying to live and assimilate those Palestinians into your land? That's right, you Israelis. The way of peace you know not. And you make covenants and you make treaties with these foreign and alien gods and these pagans around you. Because, gee, we just want to show how friendly we are and what nice guys we are. Old Leo Durocher, I think, hit the nail on the head. He said, nice guys finish last. Chapter 34, he says the same thing. He said in verse 13, this is Isaiah 34. Excuse me. Exodus. Let me get this straight. Exodus 10. Now, wait a minute. Got my head up on backwards here. Exodus 34. Get to the chapter, Exodus 34, and go to verse 10, where he said, "And behold, I make a covenant before all of your people, and I'll do marvels, such as I have not done in all the earth, nor in any nation, and all the people among which you are shall see the work of the Eternal, because it's a terrible thing that I'm going to do with you." Hey, he didn't beat around the bush. He said, "What I'm going to do with you people is going to be a terrible thing. Observe thou that which I command you this day. Behold, I drive out before you the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, Hivite, and the Jebusite. Take heed to yourself, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land where you go, lest it be for a snare in the midst of you. But you shall destroy their altars, break down their images, cut down their groves. For you shall worship no other god, for the Eternal, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Lest you make a covenant, you make a treaty with the inhabitants of the land, and they go a-whoring after their gods, and do sacrifice unto their gods, and call you to do the same." No treaties, no covenants, no contracts, no survivors. Now that's the way the God of Israel dealt with his enemies. And that's the way he told us to deal with our enemies. He ain't like the sweet Jesus away in the manger now, is it? Kind of a different story, isn't it? Well, we'll pick it up right there next time. I'll get my voice back, and we'll take up this thing of war, covenants, contracts, and peace the next time around. Now I'm trying to find my paper here so that I can remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Law School. That is the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and is open to individuals but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.